Hey there, Falcons fans. Welcome back to another edition of the Falcon Cast podcast. I'm your semi-host, Jay Adams, managing editor of AtlantaFalcons.com. Joining me is your other semi-host, co-host. What is the term for that, Daniel?
Co-host.
Co-host.
Sidekick. Partner.
Sidekick. Sidekick. Yes, you are all of those things and more, and shoeless at the moment. Daniel Cox currently is not wearing shoes in my office, so...
I'm just trying to get comfortable, Jay.
I'm just trying to paint a picture for the folks at home listening to our podcast. Thank you once again for joining us as we embark here on week two. Monday Night Football is back in the Georgia Dome. And, boy, I tell you what, I'm excited, Daniel.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
And you can tell. I mean, there's you know, the buzz that you hear about. But you can tell players, I mean, they're not more – you know, excited or amped up than, you know, any other week. But you can tell that they appreciate that, you know, that spotlight. Yeah, you know, everyone's watching. They certainly acknowledge that it's a big game. It's a big stage.
Yeah, yeah. And we just came from the locker room where Tony Gonzalez spoke. And First question was, does Monday Night Football, playing on Monday Night Football, ever get old? And He says, heck no.
Yeah.
Heck no, it doesn't.
Everybody's watching. You know, he said, you know, friends from past, you know, school teachers.
Old girlfriends.
He's like, look at me now, you know. But
yeah.
But, yeah, it doesn't get any bigger.
And, you know, Tony is, I don't know, do they do this for the Monday night games where they do the video intros for each?
Oh, yeah.
Each,
oh, and last year.
I'm Tony Gonzalez? Like the Anchorman reference.
Yes, like the Anchorman. That was classic.
That was awesome.
I hope he does something clever again.
I hope so too. He is a clever guy.
Yes.
So let's back up a little bit. Let's back up the truck and let's go into the big win over the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that we're here on Friday, and so we're quite a ways departed from that. But I think there's a lot of stuff that happened in that game that is applicable to
Absolutely.
This week. And I think nothing stands out to me more than the offense's efficiency, the Falcons' offensive efficiency during that game against Kansas City, scoring on their first eight offensive possessions, and you know, basically giving Matt Bosher the day off, save for one punt, and
he held on all the you know, the field goals and point afters though.
So you are correct.
He was getting some work, but
he was. But
and I think he'll take that trade.
Not enough to break a sweat, I don't think.
And he's okay with that.
I'm okay with that too.
I think most people are.
So yeah. You know, there was a lot of stuff I thought that happened in that game, but nothing bigger than that offense being as efficient as it was. Matt Ryan looked fantastic, throwing for 299 yards and three touchdowns, running in for another, no picks on the day. So those are the kind of things that stand out to me going into this game, because Matt's going to need another performance just like that. I mean, when you're going toe-to-toe with Peyton Manning, I mean, that's, look, the two are never going to be on the field at the same time. Matt Ryan and Peyton Manning are never going to be on the field at the same time on Monday night, unless, you know, they put Peyton in at outside linebacker and try to rush, you know,
middle linebacker,
try to blitz him. But
he's tall.
It's not going to happen. And but the thing is, like, that's my key matchup. That's my biggest matchup, is Matt Ryan versus Peyton Manning. Because I think what each of those guys do, and whoever wins that battle is going to go a long way towards, you know, dictating who wins the game overall. So seeing that against, you know, from Matt against Kansas City is certainly encouraging going into this game.
Absolutely. You know, they call the plays. And these two guys in particular, Manning and Ryan, you know, Ryan certainly this year especially, you know, he's so comfortable in Coach Cutter's offense. He's calling a lot of those plays as well, and that's what, you know, Manning's known for that. So, you know, these two offenses and the points that they put up, and I think most people feel like it's going to be kind of an offensive type style of game. You know, they're the engineers of those two offenses, and you're right, they're the headline matchup, even though they're not going to face off directly, but, you know, they're going to make everything go.
Yeah, and let's go to the other side of the ball real quick on that Kansas City game. You know, the other thing that impressed me, if we're just talking about defense, was the way that they came out in the second half, clearly made adjustments, saw what wasn't working in the first half. Now, everybody in the locker room on Monday said, hey, we came out sluggish.
Yeah.
That's just the way it was. We came out a little rusty, but we got it together. But I still think that there were some major adjustments made at halftime where these guys were put in a better position to make those plays, and I think you credit that to Mike Nolan and being able to pick that kind of stuff out. And I think adjustments are going to be a huge part of the game against Manning. Obviously, you know, Mike Nolan's no stranger to Peyton Manning. I think in his career as a coordinator, he's 1-6 against Manning. But it's one of those things where, you know, you've got to be able to come in at halftime and make those kinds of changes based on what you see in the first half.
Absolutely. You know, and the turnover, the whole turnover situation in the second half was what turned the whole game around for the basically for the Falcons. I mean, you know, the offense did what they did, but the defense needed to make some plays. And when they came out after that first, I think it was the first Chiefs possession, and then the three following possessions, they forced turnovers, and then they forced a punt on the fourth possession, and by then the game was over. You're right, they did make adjustments. What I liked most about, and what from what I've heard the guys talk about, and this certainly carries into Denver, is, you know, while they weren't playing at their best in the first half, they never lost, the game never got away from them. They never lost composure. You know, they didn't try to force a play, and from talking to guys and, you know, watching football over the, you know, the years, you know, when guys start trying to force plays, especially on defense, you know, they try to take the game over, try to, you know, step in someone else's shoes, you know, so to speak, and maybe do a little more than maybe they're supposed to. And we hear a lot about that, you know, play a role and all that. You know, that's when things start to fall apart, especially against a guy like Manning. When we look forward, you know, Coach Smith was saying yesterday, you know, if a guy is, you know, a half yard out of his alignment where he's supposed to be, you know, for the play call, you know, Manning's probably going to see it. Maybe he won't pick up on it right away or you know, hit it right away, but he's going to see it. And if he sees it again, he's going to make a call to exploit that. But I really like the composure that they had, you know, in the first half. Things never really got away from them. And then in the second half, they just came out and just dominated, really. I mean, those three turnovers obviously changed the game. And, you know, and that's going to be big against Manning if they can force a turnover or two. But again, you know, play composed, you know, within all that, that's going to go a long way.
Yeah, for me, it's all about momentum. And when you look at that Kansas City game, that's what the second half was. You know, the Chiefs had three straight drives that ended with Falcons turnovers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big thing when you're talking about Denver and disrupting Peyton Manning and keeping Matt Ryan on the field. And getting him back on the field. But, you know, one of the things that impressed me about Peyton Manning, and let's get into Manning, because everybody else is talking about Peyton Manning. Everybody and their sister, it seems, is asking, well, what's he going to do in his first road game with the Broncos? But, you know, for me, one of the most impressive things last week watching their win over Pittsburgh was when he was off the field for 57 minutes and came in and two plays into his first drive after being off the field for 57 minutes, he scores a touchdown with Demaryius Thomas. It was the most amazing thing. I mean, it's one of those things where he's always ready. Like, it's just amazing how quickly this guy can hurt you when you think that, hey, our game plan is to keep him off the field, and that's what we're doing, and we're sustaining drives, and we're doing all the right things. And then he comes out and he hammers you with a two-play drive for a score. So these are the kinds of things that just you can't account for those things.
Right.
Which is why I think it's even more important against this guy. You've got to do basically everything right.
Yeah. And you know, some of the discussion this week has been, you know, the game plan against the Broncos and half of the offensive game plan or the perceived game plan and discussions with players from the media perspective is, you know, look, we have to keep Manning off the field and, you know, run the ball and be balanced and run the clock. But you're right, you know, and Todd McClure said it yesterday. He's like, you know, sure, that's the good game plan, but look what it got, you know, the Steelers. He didn't, the Steelers dominated the third quarter in terms of, you know, just holding the ball, and Manning still, look what he did. So
he can hurt you, man. Yeah. He can still hurt you.
Mike Nolan is probably in his office right now, just trying to figure it out. And Mike Nolan's one of the best in the business. So I'm comfortable with the fact that, you know, the defense is going to, you know, make some things happen. But even yesterday, those guys were saying, you know, we know we're going to give up some plays. Mm-hmm. We just have to keep our composure and just try to bounce back every play.
And the thing that you know, you got to kind of account for is losing a guy like Brent Grimes.
Yeah.
You know, earlier in the week, it's announced that you lose him for the year with an Achilles injury. And, you know, it's next man up. And that next man is Chris Owens. And he jumps into that nickel spot. Coach Smith announced on Thursday that Owens would be in that nickel position. So certainly a crucial matchup there. as the Falcons get ready. You know, the plan was all three big cornerbacks throughout the whole year, and,
yep.
and now those plans have obviously changed. So, you know, one of the things, Daniel, that I wanted to touch on real quick here before we get into our next segment, buy or sell, is how important that home field matchup, that home field advantage is going to be.
Absolutely.
With the fans. And you know, everybody is jacked up about this game. Everybody on Twitter, everybody that we're talking to, man, they can't wait. But we need to get everybody in the dome early, don't we?
The dome has to be full when the players are being announced. That's the bottom line. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yes.
I understand. You know, tailgating is – I love it too. I am guilty of, you know, taking a walk through the gulch once in a while, Falcons landing and kind of, you know, finagling some food. But this is a big deal for these guys. This is the home opener. It's not just Monday Night Football. It's the home opener for these guys, and it's the beginning of the home, you know, the home schedule. And I was thinking about 2010, the 2010 season, and the dome was gave the Falcons a significant advantage, and it became a storyline, you know, as the Falcons went 13-3 through the course of that season, you know, and the national media especially began to talk about the Falcons and going 13-3 and through that whole stretch, and the dome was a big storyline there, and I think the dome advantage will be a storyline heading into Monday night. I just don't want the fans to let that storyline down, and I don't want the fans to let the players down because they've talked about it all week too. They, you know, especially the defensive guys are like, we want to hear you guys, and they also play a role in Peyton Manning. You know, Manning played many years in the dome, but he never had to deal with some of that sound, and it's not gonna like affect him significantly. It's not gonna rattle him, but anything we can do. In the home opener in the Georgia Dome to, you know, slow him down or confuse them some because, you know, again, you know, Manning is Manning, but he's playing with a new team, and some of those guys are pretty young. So there's some complications to the offense that they're running. So anything the home fans can do to kind of confuse them or just make it challenging to hear the calls, especially when they're running that no huddle, is a really big deal. And, you know, I'm confident the fans will be there. I'm not worried about that, but you know, I'm glad you mentioned it because it is important.
Well, the Broncos are worried about it, and I saw on NFL Network that they are preparing with some pretty massive simulated crowd noise at their practices, and you know, the Falcons do that as well when they go on the road. But it's tough to duplicate that. So you know, the Broncos are banking on it, and the Falcons are banking on having that crowd noise as well. So. Definitely do your part and get out there early and be screaming.
Absolutely.
Get crazy.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move it on to our popular, extremely popular segment, buy or sell.
Taking the nation by storm, buy or sell.
Is it really?
Yes. That's what I heard on Twitter.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's very popular, Jay.
Well, then we better do a good job of it.
All right.
All right, here we go. First topic. The Falcons defense is familiar with the no huddle because they face it in practice. And we'll be ready for the Broncos version of it. I'm going to sell that with one small caveat. Yes, they practice against it all the time. I think it's different in a game.
Yeah.
And it's very different against Peyton Manning. And it's very hard to be totally 100% prepared for every different thing that Peyton Manning can do. However, the Falcons are preparing this week for that no huddle. They're working extremely hard at learning that, the little nuances and the different things that can happen. I don't know how much practice against the Falcons no huddle is going to help, but certainly, you know, getting plenty of work against the scout team this week with the Broncos no huddle will help a lot. That's just my take on it.
That's interesting, Jay. Yeah, I mean, he might have swayed me there. I was thinking bye, and just because this is what I see, an energetic group of guys on defense. I think of Weatherspoon leading the pack, you know, Asante Samuel. These guys, high-energy guys that, you know, they kind of thrive in that moment, and I feel like You're right. You know, Manning in the no huddle is a completely different monster, and there's no real way to simulate that. But I feel like they're going to be prepared because they do face some of that in practice. But the key thing that Spoon said to us yesterday was, you know, we're practicing all week without a huddle on defense and keeping that pace up and keeping that tempo up. And I think that's going to help more than anything. If there's anything that helps them, you know, in that matchup, it's practicing that way and keeping their energy up. So maybe I'm on board with you too. Maybe I'm selling that, you know, the Falcons facing, the Falcons no huddle, you know, each day in practice is not really going to be an advantage for them.
Right. We can disagree sometimes.
You swayed me, Jay.
We can disagree sometimes. It's okay.
Well, it's okay to disagree, but okay. I think you're kind of right, though. I think okay. You make a good point.
I hope I do. All right, so let's get on to the next topic. The Falcons have abandoned the running game after week one. What say you, Daniel Cox?
I'm selling all day long on that. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous to say that. Here's what happened in Kansas City, in my opinion. I think the Kansas City Chiefs were prepared to stop the run. And the Kansas City Chiefs have a good run defense. And I feel like the Falcons realized quickly that the running game was going to be a challenge, last Sunday. And the great thing about the offense is they're prepared to, you know, switch gears. And we saw what happened with the Falcons passing game. I feel like it was just a tough challenge, you know, and I don't think that the running game is going to be abandoned at all. In fact, you know, a number of guys yesterday said, and I wrote about it on the website yesterday, you know, there's no concern in the Falcons locker room about the ability of the Falcons running game with Michael Turner and the rest of those guys. And Michael Turner didn't express any concern yesterday either. So I'm not buying that at all. I'm selling that the Falcons have abandoned the running game. I think we're going to see, you know, another effort to run the ball against the Broncos on Monday.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and sell it too. I think it's all going to depend on what the defense is willing to give up. And, you know, I think with just the weapons on offense, I mean, the Falcons can do so many different things going into every game. And we saw it last year too, is, you know, some days could be a big running day for them. Some days could be a big passing day. Obviously, it's no secret that the ball in the running game is going to be spread around a little bit more. They want to save Michael Turner for later in the season and the postseason should they get there. And so I don't think that's the number of carries that Turner's getting as a surprise there. We kind of knew that was coming. But have they abandoned the running game? No, absolutely not. I don't think any NFL team can afford to do that at all at any point during the season. Let's get into the next buy or sell. The coaching staffs of each team have familiarity with each other. Coach Del Rio and John Fox with Mike Smith, Mike Nolan, Dirk Cutter. Plenty of ties there as they've pretty much all coached with one another at one point.
In some ways,
This familiarity gives one team an advantage, and I'm going to go ahead and sell that. I don't think any advantage. Sure, you pick up the little nuances, the different things that each coach can do. But I like what Dirk Cutter said about this earlier in the week, and he said, look, the players got to play, you know, and that's what it comes down to. Yeah, you can have a good idea of what your good friend from, you know, however long ago is going to do on offense or defense, but football is about players, and it's not about schemes or plays or anything like that. And so it's for him and for me as well, I think it comes down to the talent on the field.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, great point. I feel like any advantages found in there, you know, with, you know, Coach Cutter with Del Rio or Coach Smith with Del Rio's defense, any of those familiarities and all those things, I feel like they just cancel each other out. You know, there may be some things that each side will recognize from the other, but you're right. The end of the game, the end of the story with that is players. You're right, and how they can effectively, you know, run those schemes and everything. Or on the opposite side, you know, like for instance, the Broncos stopping Coach Cutter's offense, you know, against Coach Del Rio's defense. You know, I think the advantages cancel each other out, so I don't feel like that's something that anyone should be concerned about. And I feel like there was some concern earlier in the week. You know, a lot of Twitter questions and things were coming in about, you know, that those advantages, and they felt like the Broncos maybe had an edge there, but I feel like they cancel each other out. I don't think it's a story at all.
Very nice.
All right.
I think we got through that section without fists.
Nice.
Which is nice. Let's see if we can get through the next one without fists. Here okay. we go. Twitter questions. We asked you for your Twitter questions on Twitter. Twitter questions on Twitter. Right?
Twitter questions on Twitter. Yes.
Redundant. Okay. So, hanging with Coop asks, could we see more short/quick and screen passes to slow down the pass rush of Denver linebacker Von Miller and defensive end Elvis Dumervil? I think yes. I think that's yeah. certainly a huge part of it. You know, these two guys are monsters, and there's really no other way to put it.
Yeah.
They will get after the quarterback. They will get in the backfield. They're both extremely disruptive forces. And I think the longer you hold the ball in the backfield, the better chance you have of somebody getting to you when it comes to these two. So I think, yeah, you're going to see those short, quick passes. You're going to see that screen pass. And I think you're going to see that screen pass throughout the year. You saw the bubble screens with the wide receivers. We've seen Quiz get involved. We've seen Tony get involved.
Turner.
We've seen Turner get involved. You're going to see that throughout the year regardless of who the Falcons are facing. But I think in this game, sure, I could see a little bit more of a reliance on that because of those two guys coming at you full force.
Absolutely. It's, you know, when we began to discuss the onset or the new story of the screen game and with the Falcons back in, you know, March and April and May, that was one of the first things some of the linemen were saying was, you know, the offensive linemen love that screen game because it kind of helps them, you know, slow down that pass rush because those guys can't quite be as quick with their first step because they have to, you know, they have to stop and see what's happening. And just to speak on that bubble screen thing, man, that Julio Jones play, I thought was amazing.
Wasn't
Harry
it?
Douglas let you know, it may have been close, but it was a great block on that play. Justin Blaylock was running out there as well, and Julio just took it to the house. And that was a wrinkle that no one saw coming in the preseason. And that's what I loved about, you know, that offense. And, you know, that just kind of proves the point that, you know, the Falcons weren't showing everything in the preseason, and why, you know, sometimes you can't be so quick to develop your ideas about what a team's going to do in the preseason. But to answer the question, absolutely. I mean, I think it's imperative that they try to rely on some of that. And the running game's going to help as well, but you know, the screen game is almost an extension of the running game. We hear that a lot, and I think it's going to be critical.
You know, going back to the bubble screen there, it's an interesting point that Todd McClure brought up in our weekly feature on AtlantaFalcons.com.
Yes.
State Farm film session, where he goes over two of the biggest plays of the game, and that ended up being one of them that he went over and kind of drew on the telestrator for. So check it out. Every week we have that on AtlantaFalcons.com.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that he said is that he tells Julio, hey, I'm out there, and I'm out there blocking for you, but if you're not going to use my block, you better outrun the guy. And it's kind of funny because if you go back and you look at that play, that's exactly what happened. Todd went out to make the block. Julio just didn't want to wait on it and just sped right past, and at least Todd was out there to celebrate. But I think you are going to see a lot more of that, and I think teams are going to start preparing for it. But I think it's going to be so hard to prepare for that particular one with Julio being as fast, as shifty as he is. It's hard. You can't duplicate that from your practice squad. So, you know, you can prepare for the scheme again, but you can't prepare for the player.
And even if you're effectively defending it, you know, the Falcons wide receivers, and this is one of the reasons I think those three guys are so important and why they're here, Roddy, Harry, and I believe it was a factor in why Julio Jones was drafted by the Falcons, is they're such good blockers. You know, they're physical guys, and they like the block. They enjoy it. They've talked about it before. You know, they'll block in the run game. You know, and Turner's always talked about those guys doing that. And we saw it with Harry. I mean, that was a great block he threw on. You know, and how many wide receivers? How many a trio of wide receivers are that effective and that good at blocking for each other?
Yep. All right. Next question from Kirkpatrick96. How do you think the loss of Brent Grimes will affect the game plan against Peyton Manning? Daniel?
I mean, it affects it, but one of the key things I heard yesterday in the locker room, for what came from Thomas Dekou, He said, you know, the loss of the player is significant because he's a talented player. You know, he's a teammate. But the scheme is not going to change. So it kind of just falls that whole idea that next man up thing is important. But, you know, Chris Owens is going to step in into, you know, he's going to see more snaps on the field. I think Franks and some of those other guys are going to be important as well. But, you know, I don't think that the scheme is going to change. Owens just is going to have to play. And, you know, I mean, it does affect the game. Grimes is a talented player. You know, we've seen what he can do. And I think Manning might try to exploit that a little bit. He's going to go after it. Owens is going to be tested. I think Robinson and Asante will both be tested because, you know, those three guys are now going to be playing together, and they don't have maybe the experience playing together that Grimes did with the other two guys as well. So I don't think it affects the game plan necessarily, but it's still significant in defending Manning.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a lot bigger than that. I think, you know, it's one of those things where you got to look at what personnel is out on the field, and you look at Mike Nolan's base defense, and you know, Akeem Dent, the middle linebacker, was only on the field for 11 snaps against Kansas City, and so that means that cornerback, that nickelback, was on the field then, and you know, being Dante sliding into to the nickel, and then Asante Samuel sliding out to his side. I think the one of the bigger things, though, here that I don't think anybody's really paying attention to is Asante sliding out to that left side. And, you know, he was when Dante would move into the nickelback position, Asante would be on the right side, which he's admitted plenty of times. He feels way more comfortable on that left side.
Yeah.
And I think that may help make up for everything. Is putting Asante back on that left side. He feels comfortable. It's where he earned all his stripes in the NFL, is over on that left side. I think that's the storyline with all this that's kind of flying under the radar right now, is him going over to that spot where he's clearly comfortable. And, you know, we'll see how it ends up. But, you know, I like Owens in that spot. I think he's shown a lot on special teams. And look, all these guys have been cross-training at a lot of different positions. It's not like Chris Owens doesn't have any experience at the nickel position. He played it last year in a different system. But these guys have been really cross-training a lot of different areas in the secondary. And there's a lot of different guys who can do it. So I'm not totally concerned. I think it affects the game plan to a certain extent, like you said, but I think what affects the game plan more for me is seeing Asante Samuel in a position he's extremely comfortable in.
That's a good point. And, you know, one of the keys to all of this is pass rush. Let's not forget about that. You know, John Abraham and those guys, Ray Edwards and those guys in the middle. I think Edwards, Bray-Jerry, you know, but Babs had a pretty good game last week. He had a sack that somehow seems to have, you know, escaped. Like I looked at the stats afterwards, and there's points in the game when you're watching it, especially for us, you know, there's things that you're going to miss just because we're kind of working the game. And I looked at the stats, and I was like, whoa, he had a sack. I didn't even realize it. You know, John Abraham had an outstanding game, and
sure.
I think that's really great to see him get out of the gate so strong. But that pass rush can make up for that loss for Grimes a little bit. But you're really right. I love Asante on the left side. He loves being there. I'll never forget him when he first his first session with the media. He said, you know, that's where I made all my money. You know, all the right-handed quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
That's where I want to be. So you're right. His comfortability there and his you know, getting back to his home kind of his home, you know, position, I think is kind of under the radar there. And I like that point, Jay.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's a great point.
It's these little things I pick up throughout the week.
Yeah,
you know?
You're doing your job.
Little nuggets of information.
Doing your job. You know your role.
I know my role, and I shut my mouth.
Yes, that's for sure.
Not really. All right, well, that's going to do it for another edition of the FalconCast podcast. We thank you so much for joining us here on AtlantaFalcons.com. For Daniel Cox, I'm Jay Adams, and we will talk to you next week.
Yep.